from my other life in criminal justice, there are a bunch of programs where they say that consistent and rapid sanctions are more likely to change behaviors. So if you're on probation and you get called in the day that you do your violation and you get sent to jail for 2 days, you're much less likely to violate in the future. But I don't know whether that's true.
You want to start putting people in jail for this?
Only for 2 days. It focuses their mind.
Definitely clear out traffic.
For those of us who are listening,
they do it in
he was being facetious. We should have told you we are.
Overcrowding. Overcrowding prison.
I assumed that was the case.
Okay.
So changing customer behavior drives down the number of violators, if possible.
Yes.
So Sean, is there anything out there? Are there any studies? Is there any information where other agencies have looked at this? Are you aware of anything like that?
We've talked to other tolling organizations, and they are all trying to move to something that is monthly or quarterly, in part because they feel as if the customers respond better if they're notified right away, and that they're less likely, to the chair's point, of violating again and again.
So, Christy, to your point, so there's a new system that's coming in place.
Yep.
Does a decision has to be made right away, or do you think we got some time?
We could certainly test something. It would be nice to have something to test, and certainly we want to, as this new system is being developed, and it's starting to be developed now, or will start to be developed now, we'd like to give them some direction that while we want flexibility in this area, you know, start at 6 months or start at 1 year.
Right.
So, but what we could do is either through a survey or another focus group, I don't know if we could pull kind of if anybody would fess up to themselves being repeat violators, we could check and see, you know, you could test something to see if you could get at what would actually change their behavior, mm-hmm. or I don't know if you can really do that in a focus group or if it really just takes kind of the real world test of a new look back. But we can maybe think about pursuing 6 months for the time being, but also come back to you all with how we would suggest getting customer feedback on that between now and the time that it ultimately went into effect, whether it be through a survey or focus group or something like that.
Some additional information and some data points.
Okay.
And I know, and I should have asked this at the beginning, I know that some of our biggest violators are commercial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does this, have we taken that into account, or are they such a numerically small portion, but financially such a big portion that they should be treated sort of in a different way?
What we hear from them and what we observe from them is that they do like to be notified quickly. The faster they're notified, the faster they can address a problem with their drivers, with their lessors, whoever it might be. Their biggest concerns are having the time to respond. They feel somewhat like the government organizations. When they're a fleet, when they have multiple cars, they have a much harder time getting all the notices in and then making sure that they get sent out to the right people or dealt with in the right way. So 30 days, I think, will actually really benefit that group. And they all would like an easier way to see what rolls up to them, which a new system might help them be able to do.
But I think, based on what we're taking a look at, this two-year look back, based on the information that I've seen coming from Sean, they don't really fall into this.
Right.
Those commercial violators, they're hitting that. They're not hitting it and spreading out four over 2 years. When they hit it hard. Yeah. And that's why you see those really high numbers and the quick turnover.
Yeah, but they can't believe they've racked up 50,000 in violation notices in a month or whatever. 50,000 violations in a month or 2 months.
Right. So, okay, so we're taking a look at right now, just so that I understand, we're going to ask Shauna to take a look at the three violations on the six-month time frame.
Seems to make sense.
And take a look at where our focuses are going to be. We have the numbers on the net recovery, taking a look at what potential impacts it would have from a customer service perspective, and that would have to be through a focus group or survey. Mm-hmm. And then somehow, through I guess the same means, trying to take a look at which of these options would look or be most effective in actually changing behavior and limiting the number of violations. Is that
violations and violators, right? Changing violator behavior. They go hand in hand, I would imagine, but
mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Excellent.
I think perfect is the word.
And to your point, Chad, it really sounds like it falls in line with more industry standards if you're saying they're trying to get to a month and quarterly right. basis. It really mm-hmm.
Great.
That brings us then to just some updates that we wanted to let you know of. We've long been talking about continuing to enhance the services we give to fleets. One of the places that we started is our website. We have our Contact Us link up and running, meaning that if you are a fleet and you're searching our website and you have a fleet question, if you put, you're welcome to email us directly and someone will take that and deal with it directly. We're also updating our web guidance. It should be up in the next few weeks, where we have taken apart every part of our website that has to do with fleet. We've tried to better manage the language, and we've tried to expand a lot of the forms that are available on our online to these our organizations. So we break it down. Again, seeing it on this the screen will be hard. You can see it a little better on your computer. We try to break it down between truck fleets, rental and leasing fleets, government fleets, and just other commercial fleets, anyone else, limousines sometimes. And what we have available are very specific instructions for what the options are for updating the license plates, for instance, on an IFAS account. When you're updating hundreds or thousands of license plates on an IFAS account, it's very hard. We do have services in place to do it, but we've never provided those forms or specific guidance around it. That is now going to be on our website. Same goes for rental and leasing fleets. We have arrangements with almost every rental and leasing company in the area, and that grows every year. But now on our website will be the actual forms and instructions that say, if you are a rental or leasing company, by law, this is what you have to have in place to reassign your violations, and this is what you have to recertify with us every year, and this is what you have to give us or arrange with us when you have a reassignment to make. So it will be, it should be very instructive and a decent start to all that we hope to do.
And you'll be able to track utilization.
Yes, yes.
Just an off question. Do, mm-hmm. do we have a social media presence?
Mm-hmm. We do.
Is it utilized? Is it fight the
I think Wendy is probably, Wendy Abrams would be the best person to brief the committee on that. We do have some. I mean, part of the challenge for us is, you know, how much of a presence do we have that we have the ability to maintain and keep vibrant and make sure that we're, whether Facebook or tweeting or what have you. We do have a Twitter feed with our traffic updates and real-time, you know, issues that come up on our roadways and so we have tried to do some of that, but maybe that would be a good topic for this committee. Maybe and you can take a break, Shauna, and you can have Wendy come in and fill up some of our presentation time. Does that make sense? Is our
social media presence?
I guess I was just thinking about in terms of so the main two modes of communication are our website and probably direct mail. Those are two ways we communicate with.
Right. Mail, email, and website. I don't know if you put website kind of in the same category as email, but we do a lot of emailing.
We do.
And then for some of these things, we do, you know, use Twitter or others. But we can have Wendy come and give us a full presentation on our communication generally, but social media in particular. And you can take a break for a couple minutes.
That's a good idea. Good question.
This topic of online truck permits, by the way, is more of an FYI than anything. It's not something that Shauna's unit necessarily deals with. This is actually handled within engineering and our maintenance division. But we do have truck permits. Trucks are required to get permits, particularly if they're overweight or oversized on our system every year. And we've just tried to implement here a couple of future plans, or trying to implement a couple of improvements here to make it easier for them to deal with us and interact with us on the permitting process. It's been pretty archaic up to this point. You know, you have to stop at a plaza, or you have to send something, you have to write a check to pay us, you know, invoicing. You know, it's not maybe the easiest way for them to deal with us, and often they don't necessarily even, sometimes they don't know months in advance that they're going to be using the tollway system. They only know days in advance of their trip, and there certainly have been times when at least truck drivers would tell us, you know, we're parked on the side of some road just off the tollway system waiting for that permit to come through, because it's a pretty big fine if they're caught without the appropriate permit and certification to be on our system. So just wanted to kind of make you aware of these and trying to get Shauna off the hook here, because I know this isn't her, her area of her responsibility, but we wanted to make you aware of it.
And is that a conscious management decision, or is this a historic sort of anomaly that it's in engineering instead of with you?
It's certainly historic. It has always been within the maintenance, traffic maintenance division and engineering. I don't know that if it makes sense to put it with Shauna, who is really kind of electronic toll collection. Mm-hmm. There are elements here where we want to be able to do an assessment of whether these trucks can fit through certain, you know, under bridges or on our system. But it's certainly something we could revisit and see if there's a better place to house it in the agency, just to make it generally easier for these groups to deal with us. That's a good point.
I would just say that I think that the expertise that goes into making these assessments on what those are, as I kind of learned a little bit about this, it's a rather technical process for coming up with the permit, the fee, and the impact that it's going to have on the tollway. And So for that reason, just based on my discussions with them, I think it's appropriately housed in that department. The issue is, and I think that this is a big step moving forward and kind of combining those two, you know, and I think we find this on a lot of the stuff. We're moving into probably where we should have been as far as trying to become more customer friendly and how they manage that. So it's kind of a merger of those two, but I don't see really how we would ever, I mean, we can take a look at it further, but I'm not sure that we'd ever be able to completely house that in one of the two sections. It just brings in too many areas for it to be.
Although maybe we can look at, you know, system-wise, as we put together the system that manages IPAS, right, and improves fleet management, is there a way to systematically, you know, create portions of that system where wherever the truck permitting group is in engineering, or could all use the same system, and somehow it would make their lives easier.
Yeah, just thinking about the people sitting on the side of the road waiting for the permits. If there were, if you combined the attempt to be expeditious in Shauna's division, not that the engineering people aren't, but the technical expertise from the engineering people, and maybe it's just maybe it isn't even where it's housed, but it's how, as Jeff's director Reddick says, it's how you meld the skills of both of those units.
Sounds to me like this may be something we call Tim on.
Right. Tim Pulaski is our head of the working to create this fleet unit, so we'll have to see what we can.
I just want to just make sure I'm just picturing this in my head correctly. So there's a truck that doesn't have the proper permit.
Correct.
If it's, no matter if it's 3-4 a.m. in the morning, if they're pulled on the side of the road, we actually have someone who can.
No, they need to plan in advance. There's not, they can't pick up the phone and call us at 4 a.m. and expect that they're going to get a permit right at that moment. And
so during
business
hours.
Right, during business hours, they're dealing with us now with an online application submission, hopefully still in advance of their trip. you know, they will be able to go online and be able to submit the necessary paperwork. It won't be this process of stopping at a plaza or, you know, putting it in the mail or, you know, sending it to us some other way, but they could actually do it online. There won't be 24/7 somebody on call to get them a permit, but we haven't necessarily heard from the industry that they require that. There's usually enough planning in advance that if we can streamline some of these other things, they typically aren't finding out at midnight that they're going to be on the tollway system and needing this permit. So.
And this is 10,000, approximately 10,000 in a year.
Yeah.
And that's a significant number, but compared to the millions of trucks that are going through the system, I mean, this isn't every.
Sure.
Just those that need an overweight permit, or they're oversized, or they're somehow unusual versus, you know, a typical.
Say you had a big magnet.
Giant magnet. Yeah, makes sense. She's like a magnet. Right.
All right.
That brings us to the discussion of the Indiana toll concession fee. Just to recap a little bit, we've been discussing, at least in the last few months, the fact that when an IPATH customer drives through the Indiana toll point, they incur that Indiana toll charge plus 3 cents per transaction. And that plus 3 cents then gets remitted back to the Illinois tollway as part of the agreement within the EZPass group, because the Indiana roads are run by a private concessionaire. It's a complex web, but we've been discussing it because there was a question of fairness and how the future might look, and also because we get inquiries from our IPATH customers about that extra 3 cents that Indiana passes through.
And this goes back in time to, you know, a private concessionaire coming and running one of these roadways. There were some members of the EZPass group, we frankly don't think Illinois was vocal among them, that said, we are public entities, we can't be subsidizing or appear to subsidize a private for-profit concessionaire. So the ability to charge this type of fee was built in at that time, right?
Correct.
So
sounds like that's where they should be revisited. Is that possible?
I think that it would be at the EZPass level might be a little difficult to revisit, but we can certainly start having those discussions. We wanted to give a little background because I think the last time we talked about it, we weren't quite clear on what it was or why or how it happened. So we wanted to give this background. We have had some back and forth with the Indiana Toll Concession, the company that has the and is responsible for the Indiana toll roads, and while I don't know that they've agreed to drop the cost, I think we have made some compelling points about so many, even of their own drivers, who are primarily Indiana drivers, use IPATH and the Illinois transponder, as Director Reddick, I know,
which
Chair Reddick knows.
Bear the cost.
And that was done because they didn't have their own transponder at the time those roads opened, or they weren't issuing their own transponders, and really relied on Illinois' back office system to support their customer service operation. So regardless of what we can do legally or what we could, certainly they've agreed to try to help potentially transition some of those drivers over to an Indiana or to their own transponder so that they aren't just using Illinois' transponder and ultimately costing the Illinois tollway a great deal of money.
This is just an issue that has been stuck in my craw since we found out about this. And the long and the short of it is, the more background that I get on this, probably the more disturbing it is to me. And I think Christy hit on the point that is most significant to me. as Indiana kind of piggybacked onto the idea of electronic tolling, they kind of took a partial approach to it, and that is they would implement and put in the hardware so that they could collect electronic tolling. But as far as all of the work associated with the collection, the establishment of a black backroom system, and everything that we do, all of the first part of this agenda that we've been dealing with, all these other issues, they simply passed it along by entering into this agreement that we would have a reciprocity, essentially, for collections between these between the systems, primarily ours. Due to proximity, what they were doing is they have a system where they can collect tolls electronically. However, they didn't issue transponders. So they, you want a transponder and you want to take advantage of it, you're an Indiana resident that drives on our system every day, go to Illinois and pick one up. So now what they're doing is under this agreement where we have people that are using the Illinois transponder, and we're going, they use those roads in Indiana just as people with Indiana use ours, they're charging an administrative fee, that pass along, which is allowed by the intergovernmental agreement. Clearly we have an agreement where they would pay us 3 cents per transaction for collection and vice versa. In this particular case, the private entity that has contracted out to take it basically said, you know, we never really figured that into our cost associated with this. So rather than eating that as part of an operational cost, instead, everybody that uses an Illinois transponder, they're getting an additional charge. Let's say it's a dollar toll. It shows up as a dollar and then 3 cents. So I think it was appropriately pointed out at one of the earlier meetings, it's an issue of fairness. And that's kind of where I've been stuck. And I get it. David and I have sat down and we've gone through the background on this. And I have grown an appreciation for how we got here. I don't think that it has changed one bit. My personal opinion on this, and while I'm glad to hear that there may be some movement in this, I'm reluctant to sit back and wait to see what that may be. My question...
And what would you have us do?
Well, and I think that at this point we need to, just so that this committee has everything available, I want to make sure that we have, because I do understand there's a cost, in the event that we were to engage in a similar process, mm-hmm. where there was a pass along to Indiana customers, what would that cost be to us, an operational cost, because I understand that there will be one. But I think that's important.
And some type of legal analysis of whether we could single out a group like that.
Sure, that's what I was going to ask. There are options.
Yes.
Okay.
And the one question that I've still never fully seen, I know there's been some speculation on our part about where they get the legal authority as this private entity, because when they entered into this agreement, when they were Indiana engaged them, they regulated how much they could charge for tolls. It was set how much they were allowed to charge mm-hmm. people. I'm not sure where they get the authority that they think this falls outside of that. And I would like to make a demand. I'd ask that staff contact to make the demand. Where do they get that? Where are they legally entitled to pass that along outside? And why isn't that considered part of the toll as a cost? Because if for no other reason, if we can get them to assert the legal basis that they believe they have for this, we can at least evaluate the appropriateness of it, mm-hmm. instead of trying to come up with all the potential options for this. I'm sorry, Director Dodson, I kind of jumped off on that one.
Let me just ask this question. How important is interoperability for us in all of this? So, you know, clearly we're interoperable now with 14 other states, and, you know, where does that rate in terms of, you know, obviously there's a fairness question, which we are attuned to, and we have to take a look at. How important is interoperability, continued interoperability?
In all honesty, I think it's a bigger issue for them than it is for us. I mean, if you take a look at the sheer numbers, I think that it's a more significant issue for them than it is for us. But I recognize what our goals are, and in I don't want to. I think we need to try to attain. I mean that's a goal, and I think
maintain interoperability, but with maybe more fairness on this particular point.
Well, on all points, this is just one I'm aware of at this point.
Right. Well, but I mean, you've had the conversations with, and I think we all have on legal. We'll task them with kind of coming up with, you know, what we should actually be asking. And I know we've taken a look at, you know, within the EZ-Pass agreement, there clearly is this authorization and authority for them to do this. This charging. So, but we'll take a look at, you know, making the type of request or demand, as you mentioned, to them for what their basis is. Do we all agree that we want to take, I mean, that, I think we want to be thoughtful about, I'm going to be honest, I'm going to be very thoughtful about how we do that, because I don't think we benefit by creating animosity between two states or two units within the EZ-Pass network. But I do think that we have to get to the bottom of, you know, what we can do to remedy this situation.
What's the I'd be curious of the, what's the cost? I'd be curious in just in terms of what's the line item for them. I mean, what the profit is there? What is their profit a margin there that they
I don't
rely
know if they
on, or that it's something that they just. Is it, I mean, what does it look like for them? And then on our end, what does that look like? Or how many of those people are affected who go to Indiana? And I mean, have we received any type of complaints or, you know, what does that look like in terms of how many people does that really affect?
We definitely have sporadically received complaints recently. When it first started happening, I think that there were more people who were, you know, what is this 3 cents? Charge. So we definitely hear some complaints about the 3 cent charge. Shauna, we did some analysis of what it costs us. Well, $7.50 each year is what they pay us.
That's the net number.
That's
the
net number.
After we offset each end. Because there's money going both ways, Director.
Right.
Their Indiana drivers are driving here, so we're paying that, and they've got, you know, we're driving there. So when you net all that out, we have many more. Illinois in Indiana that were allowed to charge the 3-4. When you net that out, that's the $7.50 differential
that we get.
Net
they pay us, but what are our
the cost
of our customer service operation? And I know we've done some work on that.
We estimate that we spend about $1.5 million a year on serving customers that are driving through Indiana. For those transactions. And we receive back $750,000 of that,
which means that we are paying out of pocket $750 to subsidize their Some would say to subsidize their customer service for their customers
at 50%.
That's significant. It's not a significant number,
right? So certainly. A near-term plan of attack. We'll work with legal to frame the question the right way about asking kind of what they feel their statutory authority is, or contractual, or what have you. But try to get to the bottom of that question. We are going to continue to work with them to see how much we can, we can create some incentives for these customers who historically use the Illinois transponder, but really they're primarily driving on the Indiana system. Can we create would they be willing to create some incentive to get them off of the Illinois transponder and onto an Indiana transponder? Because that will reduce, in theory, that $1.5 million overall cost. Right?
Right.
Anything
else?
It would.
So I just want to make sure I understand it. So if I'm an Illinois customer and I go to Indiana, I have a transponder, I may well use their system, then they actually mail. How do I know that I owe them 3 cents?
It's debited from your iPass account.
Oh, right. So it's $1.03.
Yep, right. Or $5
That's
three,
so they can
or whatever.
See it on their iPass
statement.
Also, they
can see it on the statement. Okay.
And the costs that we're incurring are every time they replenish their iPass account, we incur those credit card fees. every time we mail them a postcard saying your credit card's been declined, we spend all that money on the customer service. They can get that.
And what we're finding is that there's some portion of people driving on the Indiana roads with Illinois transponders that are actually, they live in Indiana, they're really only driving on Indiana system, but they just have found it more convenient to get the Illinois transponder.
They probably got it early on, when it was the only option, and maintaining it versus turning it in, changing accounts, and then switching.
Yep.
And I would likely be in the same situation. It's easiest.
Right, there's not really an incentive for them to get the Indiana one, so maybe attacking it from both ends.
Because we have such darn good customer service, so why would they want to leave?
Anything else? This is, I know, a new issue for you that we should be thinking about, or any background that we should
provide? I think that's a good start. I mean, I think you're off to, if you can nail down those three things, that'll give you a good platform to move forward.
Okay.
That's a great start.
Good.
The only thing I would add, obviously you're going to find out what our authority is and what our options are. I just, if you say that the door has closed with the actual consortium working this out amongst themselves, then I get that.
Well, we'll see. We'll raise it with them. Indiana would say, if Illinois just would have spoken up, this concessionaire would say, whether this is correct or not, if Illinois would have spoken up when we were first doing our agreement and would have mentioned that you wanted to do this back when the other members of the EasyPass agencies did, this wouldn't be an issue right now.
Right.
Because we would have factored it in when we took it on, we would have done our numbers, we would have, factored it in appropriately. So,
I just share your concern of maintaining that relationship and us acting somewhat as a third party to try to solve an issue that was not of our making.
Right, okay. So we'll see what we can do to address it within the, if there's something to do to address it within the EasyPass agency while maintaining hopefully friendly relationships with everybody. Good. It's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. The last slide has to do with just letting everybody know about the highlights of our latest EasyPass customer survey. Some of the points, the third point is actually one that might tie in a little bit to the discussion we had. But the first two are good. 62% of our respondents to the survey choose the tollway because it's the fastest commute. 71% prefer to communicate with the tollway online. That's great news for us. We love to communicate with people online. The third one was, I thought, very interesting. Since 2010, when we last surveyed everyone, with the same question, it looks there was a 12% increase of respondents who said that they have used EasyPass outside of Illinois. When we looked at overall reciprocity data to see kind of how their self-reported experience matches up, and we can see that in our reciprocity data that EasyPass transactions outside of Illinois have grown 9% over the last couple of years. And in fact, if you take away, if you look at just EasyPass transactions outside of Illinois and Indiana, because they're the ones where you see the most, there's been a 29% growth. There are a lot more EasyPass customers out there driving around outside of Illinois. And then more than 60% of our respondents agreed that we're a good value. The tollway is a good value.
So, in question number one, 38% choose the tollway because they like to pay. What were the other choices? It's close to my house, or
if I think it's the only way to get to wherever they're going.
Yeah, some people will. I think that's the biggest one. I don't know another way.
I led what they think, but it's the only way.
What do you mean?
It's their perception.
Great.
Right, you're right. The 38% there would be the question. They're not choosing it because it's the fastest way, then
the roads are clear of snow.
Were those the options, or was this an open?
No, I don't know.
We can get that.
Yeah. No, I get the snow.
Although it would be faster.
I just can't remember what the other options
were.
So we'll circulate it to the committee, particularly with our new director. Yeah. He might be interested in seeing what what the options were. Making sure we didn't steer people toward this answer either. I mean, if the other answers were...
Yes, those are great numbers. Man, impressive.
It seems like pretty high satisfaction but rate, but we can always do better, I suppose. wasn't it an online survey?
Correct.
Yes.
So well, not a surprise then for number two.
Two.
Right. A little bit of selection.
That's true. Okay. So we'll circulate the survey with the options. Is that okay?
Just I'll connect with Wendy.
Please.
Or see it again. I can't remember again whether we circulated once before or not, but we'll send it around.
All right. Shauna, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think we move on to our two action items. We have discussed number one under 6.0, the JCAR rule change resolution, copy of which was, the proposal was included in the packet information. Based on the discussion, I'd take a motion to approve the JCAR rule resolution as presented.
So moved.
Second.
All right, is there any discussion?
There may be some a slight language amendment to the form that you see here, given where some of the discussion occurred, Shauna, on the 30 days, not just the escalation of the 50. The one they had before them here is this really targeting on the $50 escalation pilot. Do you know what I'm saying there?
Well, the language here does include this. In the last sentence, it also allows Tollway's Board of Directors to institute a pilot program where it may temporarily suspend application of the $50 escalation penalty, right?
And I mean, he's
I'm saying that same in addition
not the gist of what you
so we so with
you're
the language needs to be will reflect the 30-day
correct
violation as well as so this $50 will allow us if we want to correct
we have that and make sure that's
part
two components of this. So that's one both of those picked up in the resolution.
Are they not? The proposed administrative rule amendment extends the time which a toll violator may pay the initial fine from 14 to 30 days following the final order of liability. It also allows the Tollway's Board of Directors to institute a pilot program where it may temporarily suspend the application of the $50 escalation penalty.
Right. Is that the resolution you want?
Is there something contra...
No, I thought that's what we were going for.
This is what Bob had put together, and I do have the good kind of track language from the JCAR rule itself. Mm-hmm. People wanted to see it.
Do we need a roll call? It has to go to the board.
Voice vote to the consent.
Right. Okay. Consent to all those in favor of approval and submitting to the full board for consideration, signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed. And that will move forward. Now, the settlement guidelines do not go to the board. Is that right?
Sure they do, Shauna, do they not? With a recommendation from this committee?
That is my understanding, yes.
Yeah,
if
that's your best practice.
Then I would look for a motion to send to the full board the settlement guidelines proposal with recommendation for approval by the full board.
Thank you.
Oh, so moved.
There's been a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? And those will move to the full board next week. Unfinished business?
What could there possibly be?
I've got... No, I'm just kidding. None? Any new business? Do we have anything for executive session? Nothing that I'm aware of. Then I'll take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
We are in adjournment. Thank you very much for your time and your input.